How about if I just start at the beginning? you could be honest.
Because you know what? They have the sweat equity that went into that memory that they're making with their friends and family. And that's what's important with us, and that's what the I Am Real World's about.
Well, that's a great question. You know, one of the best things about a spring food plot is you get a second chance if it fails.
Chasing Giants with Don Higgins. Brought to you by buyafarm.com, your source for farm, recreational properties, rural homes, and more. By tapping into Don's years of experience, dedication, and commitment, Chasing Giants focuses on the techniques, strategies, and dedication needed to harvest one of God's most amazing creations, world-class whitetails. Now, here is Don and co-host Terry Peer.
Well, welcome everybody to Chasing Giants episode 80. Don, it's hard to believe we're at episode 80 and it's August 29th, 2021. Hard to believe we've been going almost 2 years now.
Yeah, it is. And it's also hard to believe that it's almost hunting season.
Believe it or not, there is a very good likelihood that I'll have, before we record next episode, I'll have had two chances to be in the stand. Our season opens up on Saturday. So there's a possibility that we could be delayed recording next week because I'm dragging a deer out. That's a possibility.
I hope it's reality.
Yep. So, you know, we've been going almost 2 years now, and, you know, the I want to start the episode out. We're getting crazy amounts of private messages, tags on Facebook, and I don't mind saying names or hiding behind it. People are telling us that Pennington started, I guess, rebranding their wildlife seed company, and they're using the theme music to our song. It seems like every day we're getting a couple messages of people telling us that they're using the music from the podcast. It's kind of funny.
I've got a few of them messages too, and you know, at first I thought, you know, it's probably just a coincidence that Pennington Seed, you know, used the same music we use on Chasing Giants. But then I noticed that Pennington also added the words wildlife products to the end of their name. If you go to their website or to their Facebook page anyway, probably their website, I didn't go, but it is now Pennington Seed Wildlife Products, kind of like Real World Wildlife Products. But I'm not sure how to take it. I guess it's a compliment that they think enough of us that they're trying to copy us.
Yeah, and just so everybody understands, there is there's artists that record music that all of the YouTubers or video production people, you basically put it on a library, and people can go and search this library. There's multiple servers that have it, and you can buy the rights to use music. So when we created the first audio intro to Chasing Giants, we picked this out. Steve Shields actually produced that opening audio segment for us, and we paid a voiceover guy to do it. You know, we don't own the exclusive rights to that music, so there's nothing to say someone else can't find that music, like it, and use it. You tend to be a little bit more paranoid than I am, but either way, who cares? You know, I've even heard that same music used on, like, the Larson Farms YouTube channel before, and it is what it is. We need to make us a new fresh one coming up this year anyway, so it's no big deal to us. But thanks for everybody who keeps sending us that audio clip. We got it. We understand. You know, it brings up another good point that maybe you should comment to. We actually saw each other for only about 20 minutes this week. I came up to, I was somewhat in the area, and I came up to fix a couple issues with some dead cell cameras. The amount of messages we are getting right now is absolutely crazy, and I think we just need to remind everybody that we really appreciate it. It's just, we try to get to everybody, but sometimes it's not in a timely manner.
Yeah, I'm literally, I think I'm probably answering 150 plus messages a day with text, emails, phone calls, et cetera. as well as social media messages. Folks, if I seem very brief in my answer, if you ask me a question and I say yes and move on, don't take it as an insult. It's just that I've got so many of them that I'm trying to be to answer everyone. I may even miss a few. I'm sure I miss a few. I'll be driving down the road and the phone will be going off, and I'm trying to answer one and three more come in. So I'm doing my best. I apologize if I missed yours. Just send it again, and I'll do my best.
You know, we want to be respectful to everybody, and I think that's what makes us a little bit different is we want to be approachable and we want to answer questions. Just understand we have to be respectful to our families too, and just in the amount of time where Don or I will sit down to eat dinner with our family, by the time we're done and look down, we've already missed 20-some text messages and 30 emails or private messages on social media. So while we want to be respectful of our listeners and the people who ask us questions, we also have to be respectful of our families a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure. The other night I sat down and had supper with my wife and set my phone on the table, and that it just kept going off, you know, and she says, "Does that thing ever stop?" And I said, "Nah, this time of the year, no, it don't." But we do our best.
Yeah, we want to make sure we get every question answered. I don't know the right way to say it. It's just, please understand, it's really hard for us to have a long conversation with every person. You know, we want to answer the questions. And actually, you know, while I'm thinking of it, your best bet, I know a lot of people hit us up with standard food plot questions, what seed to plant. If you want quicker answers on that kind of stuff, especially product specific, your best way to do that is email info@realworldwildlifeproducts.com instead of sending Don or I a text message or social media. I promise you it will get the same answer and it will get answered faster if it goes into the real world info@realworldwildlifeproducts.com email address, because we have a system in place that basically covers those requests, so we get quick turnaround to all of our customers. So if you want fast answers on real world products or food plotting questions, just a tip for everybody, you will get a faster, more detailed response going there than you will trying to catch Don or I as busy as we are.
Yep.
So you had a pretty big setback with your fall plots this week. Last week we talked about you went in with your leaf blower with your extreme blower products and blowed in your plot topper and then drilled in your harvest salad. Talk a little bit about what happened. Would that have been Thursday afternoon, I believe?
Yeah, it was. I actually got the planting done Monday, the day after we recorded, but I talked about my plan to use the extreme blower to blow on the plot topper seed, and then I was going to no-till the harvest salad with the Genesis drill right on top of it. That's exactly what I did Monday. I had four fall plots on two different farms and got all those planted Monday, and I thought, man, I'm in great shape. There was good soil moisture and there was also rain forecast, so I thought, man, I'm within a few days these plots are going to get watered with a good rain and they're going to be up in no time. Well, Thursday afternoon, we got the rain like I've never seen in my life. Literally, we got 4 inches in an hour and 0.8 inches in 45 minutes. And I went out to check the rain gauge, 3.8 inches. I dumped it out. And then before I got back in the house, it's raining again. And we got another 2.10. So we got an hour. And I've never seen the water run down the ditches and fill up the creeks. And one of my plots was along a creek, and the creek came out, and I don't know, there was probably 6, 8, 10 inches of water in places in that plot as the creek came through and washed it away. And I've planted that plot twice in corn. If you've seen the pictures I posted on social media, it's kind of an odd-shaped plot going through a bigger corn patch. Well, it was supposed to be all corn, and then the spring rains washed it away twice. And so I just decided to wait till fall and put the deadly dozen in there. in the areas that got washed out. Well, it looks like I'm going to be doing that at least twice. So you just never know when you put that seed in the ground what can happen.
So that was the day I was driving to Illinois, and I have a property in Illinois, but it's about an hour from you, and I was almost there, and you sent me video footage of the water rolling out, and I'm driving, and it's complete sunshine, and I think the temperature gauge in the vehicle said it was like 96 or something. I'm looking around. There's not a cloud in the sky. I ended up being able to run cameras on a 300-acre field or a farm real quick. I think we have 7-8 cameras on that property. I was able to get all of those cards swapped out and back in the car, and was driving the hour from there to your house and did not get rained on one time. And I got to the property that my lease, and that's about, what is that, about 25 minutes from your house?
Yeah, something like that.
And I walked across the soybean field to check a camera. I had a cell camera down, and I wore tennis shoes across the soybean field. So that close to your house, just due east of it, didn't get but just a little drizzle. It absolutely crazy that you got that big of a monsoon.
Well, and this has literally been the wettest summer of my entire life. We had over 12 inches of rain in July and somewhere around 8 inches in August. And they're calling for rain the next 2 days. You know, it's not the end of August yet. We still got two more days of August, and they're calling for rain both those days. June had plenty of moisture, too. This is definitely the wettest summer of my entire life.
So are you going to get a chance to – do you have a break before that rain comes to try to get that plot in? Are you going to have time or not?
I looked at the plots this evening, and believe it or not, where that water washed through, in some places the seed is actually still there and germinating. The seed that was drilled in with Genesis, some of that's still there. I'm going to give it a few more days and see what comes up. I don't want to plant the seed too heavy and go in and drill where it's not going to come up. So
right.
By the end of the week, I'll have a good idea and should have an opportunity to replant if I need to.
And that's a great tip. Maybe you want to elaborate on that a little bit. You know, with weather affecting food plots, a lot of people will go in and say plant deadly dozen or harvest salad, and something like this happens. Maybe they didn't get any rain and, you know, nothing's germinated. They immediately go in and just throw more seed to it. With the products that have brassicas in it, you really have to be careful not to just throw more seed to it, because if that seed's still there, it'll cause you a problem later planting it too thick.
Yeah, having your, especially your brassicas, your turnips, radish, sugar beets, things like that, if you get those too thick, that's having them too thick. If they're too thin, you know, that each plant has the space it needs to put on a nice big bulb. But if they're too thick, it crowds them, and they don't have the space that.
So your phone's breaking in and out a little bit. I don't know if you're in the shop or what we need to do, but I'm losing you every once in a while. So, but yeah, the bulbs get too thick, and then you end up having a problem where they won't come to maturity.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I'm sitting in my truck, so it should be working. I'm not sure what the connection problem is. But.
All right. No, it's not real bad. Just lose a word every now and then. Okay. So the hopefully you can kind of get dibs on that plot this week and see what you got. For those of you who are in really dry areas that maybe planted it early, and haven't gotten rain, don't just automatically go out there and throw, you know, more seed down thinking that, you know, that the food plot failed, because then you end up getting too thick. I remember a couple years ago, I was with some buddies on a property in Indiana, and we seeded in late August and did not get rain almost the whole month of September. And those guys wanted to reseed and reseed and reseed. And we put it off, and we had one of the best stands late season, a deadly dozen. That seed was there and just waiting for water. So if we would have gone in and reseeded it, we would end up way too thick and then cause problems. So keep that in mind as you're navigating it. My plots look really good up in Illinois. Those Enlist beans are really coming on strong up there. I've been really, really pleased with the pilot program there on my lease.
Well, you know, talking about the seed laying there, Terry, it's just if you think of weed seeds, you know, weed seeds will lay out there for months or years at a time, and then when conditions are right, boom, they grow. And it's the same way with your food plot seed. They can lay there in dust for weeks. And then when you finally get that moisture, they can just explode. So don't give up.
Well, I think that that's another danger with planting your food plot, fall food plots too early, is you end up, you know, this year you've had a lot of moisture, but in a lot of years, August is really, really dry. And, you know, Dwayne Hopkins, the head seedsman over there at Real World, he told me one time the worst thing that can happen to a seed after you plant it is to get a little bit of moisture, like a pop-up thunderstorm, not like the one you got where it was 4 inches, but just a little bit of moisture in that seed shell, that seed will swell and it will crack, but then it won't get any more moisture and the plant will burn up. So I think that's one of the dangers in planting a little bit too early, not only the plant maturity, but also you get a good shot of it burning it up.
Right.
So, but yeah, I was mentioning there my Enlist beans out at the lease that you drilled with the Genesis drill. We historically, probably for the last 3 years, have had a really bad water hemp and mare's tail problem on that farm. Are you there?
I'm there. I thought you was going on, but no. Yep, we have. And the Enlist beans hopefully took care of that, along with the residual herbicide that we used when I planted those beans. It did a really good job on my farm, too. I didn't use the Enlist beans. I just went with the regular Gen 2s. And that I'd really knocked them back.
Yeah, you can. I posted a picture today of my bean plot looking over the new 360 blind sitting on the edge of the field, and you can see the place that I missed when I went back in and sprayed 2,4-D and Gly on it. So no doubt that it's really helping that plot. So all of you guys, I know I've gotten quite a bit of messages about that product. If you're dealing with mare's tail, water hemp, and any of those, I've been really, really pleased with how we can keep that control of that what do you call it, glyphosate resistant weeds? Is that the technical term for what they call the plants that Roundup won't kill?
Right.
So.
Yep, resistant.
So the other thing that I posted this week, actually it was today, is peanuts for the states that are still allowing feed. If you are looking for a supplier for bulk peanuts, I actually found one. Send me a message on social media. I can put you in touch with the guy who has a whole bunch of peanuts that he can get to you. So outside of that, what else, we need to, kind of circle back around to your trail camera pulls for this week. Last week you said that you wanted one more week before you did the buck forecast for this season. Are you ready to talk about that a little bit?
I am ready. And nothing changed over the week, but I want to look at a few more cameras over, you know, a little wider area, but, from what I've seen, this summer, and I want to stress here at the beginning, before I even get started, really, that, you know, my observation is over a limited area. Now, I've said before, I've got camera free from 33 properties, but still, that's very limited. What I see may be totally different than what you see, but over the last few a blog on my website, and given a buck forecast, and it's been pretty darn close. And this year, I want to say that I think it's going to be a down year for big bucks. I've probably seen fewer bucks under 170 or fewer bucks over 170 inches this summer than I've seen in probably about 6 or 7 years. And I don't know the reason for it. I don't know if it's the weather. Typically where I've had my cameras, it's been fairly wet, and in some cases really wet. Also cool for the most part until here recently. And cool and wet just does not go with antler growth from my experience. So I think it's going to be a down year for the Giants. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be any killed. There's always going to be some killed. But overall, I think it's going to be a down year.
Well, you ready for questions from me about it?
Yep, fire away.
So somebody that listens to the podcast very regularly knew that this was coming up, and they had the suspicion that you were going to say it was going to be a down year. Their question that they wanted me to ask you on air was, have you looked at the harvest numbers, at least in your area, that kind of tie two and two together? Did we have more bucks harvested last year because people were off work with COVID and people hunted more last year, is why we're not seeing a lot of the bucks that maybe we thought was going to come back?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and it's a great point. I don't know if it ties to COVID and more people in the woods. I think what it ties to, just to be brutally honest, because I've seen it over a couple years, you know, I've said many times that if I can get a buck to 3 years old past gun season when he's a three-year-old, there's a great chance that I can get him to six. It's that first 3 years that's a real struggle. That buck is moving in daylight a whole lot more, and he hasn't figured things out, and there's a really good chance he's going to get killed. If I can get him past gun season when he's three, he's got a really good chance to make it to five or six. But the last 2 years, I have lost more three-year-olds than ever before, and I'm talking good ones. When I really pay attention, when I got a good three-year-old, I really got to pay attention because he's just 1 year away from, you know, being really tough to kill. And I've lost a bunch of good ones, way more than I used to. And I chalk it up to, just being brutally honest, I chalk it up to the crossbow.
Right.
There's way more pressure during the archery season now. Probably this year, for the first time ever, the archery harvest in LA is going to, and I think that that's taken a lot of bucks out of the herd. I think also once a more mature deer herd, I think CWD is found in the older, more mature animals, especially the older males, and I think DNR, I suspect DNR does not want that older age class up there because of concerns with CWD.
Yeah. Well, if it's not that, you know, we're just trying to be honest. When Illinois went to an open crossbow friendly archery season was about the time that you're talking about losing these 3 year olds. It used to be that it was a specific season for crossbow. And I think that historically it is getting more people involved, but you're going to have a whole lot more people in the woods that traditionally would have just been a gun hunter that are able to use a crossbow. And it's as simple as that.
Right. And I just don't see the age structure. The age structure in Illinois is getting worse. It's not getting better. It's getting worse as far as fewer older age class animals.
Yeah. So something to think about. So this year you're forecasting, and you've been spot on the last couple years. You know, the year that you said there was going to be a lot of giants killed, there was a lot of big bucks killed. So hopefully a lot of our listeners are going to prove us wrong and send us, some messages of some absolute giants killed this year.
Well, there will always be some giants killed. I mean, it doesn't matter how bad the weather or whatever. you know, we just talked about all the rain that I've had here in my area this year. There's other areas. I know Northern Illinois and Iowa, there's areas that are in a drought, basically. So what I observe may be totally.
Yeah, your phone's cutting in and out a little bit, and I don't know if it's on my end. It looks like I got service, but one of the things that we want to kind of tease in this episode coming up later in September is we're actually going to have Dr. Strickland on the podcast again. He's committed to come on here in about a week and a half, 2 weeks to record an episode, and that's actually one of the questions that I want to pick his brain a little bit is how does weather in antler growing season affect things as far as antler growth. And if any of our listeners have additional questions, you need to get them in so that way we can pick Dr. Strickland's ear while he's on air with us. We're going to be recording that, I believe, here in about a week and a half. Is that right, Don?
Yeah, if things work out, that's exactly right. And just to throw a little teaser out there, when Dr. Strickland's on, we're going to announce something, some big news, if you will.
Yep. So we're gonna be working together a little bit more with him. So you don't want to miss out on the episode with Dr. Strickland coming up in a couple weeks. Speaking of some new things, we got a request from one of our listeners that I thought was kind of funny, Don. And we haven't talked about this with our wives, but somebody actually came up with the idea that they wanted to submit questions that our wives had to answer one episode. So I don't know. I'm going to sign Casey up. Are you willing to sign Robin up for this?
Oh, yeah, I'll sign her up. I don't know what it's going to cost me. But
so and we're not going to do it unless you guys submit questions. We won't prep our wives on it. Don will still pick the questions, and we'll get our wives on the phone on what it's like to live in the same house as us two idiots when it comes to our passion about hunting whitetails. So we can do this for a segment in an upcoming episode, probably before hunting season gets going too crazy, but it's going to require you guys asking some questions. So if we don't get any questions, we're not going to do it. But it does sound kind of fun. I'm not sure how I want to approach this with my wife, but she's a good sport. She'll probably do it. So, well, do you have a best and worst for this week that we want to talk about?
Oh, of course. I've always got a best and worst.
All right. Let's hear. Are you going to do the best first or the worst first?
How about we start with the best?
All right.
I might get up on a soapbox on the worst. But
never.
The best thing that I've seen, you know, the hurricane's going to hit down south. When's it expected to hit? Do you remember, Terry?
Tomorrow.
Tonight. Okay. Well, our friends at Wise Eye Cameras, we heard that they are closing their shop, but they're not leaving the area. They're going to stay there and assist as they can and help others. So I just thought that was pretty awesome that they're closing their business, but they're not hightailing it to another part of the country to get out of the hurricane's way. They're going to stick around and see how they can help others. So
yeah, I checked.
That was one of the best things I've seen.
I actually checked in with Harold this morning to ask if they were evacuating, and they've made announcements on their social media that the office would at least be closed Monday, depending on how bad it is. And asked him, you know, they're down just north of Baton Rouge, I believe, so they're supposed to get hit really, really hard. So I don't know if they'll get to listen to the podcast or not, but Harold and Daryl and Megan and Colton and all those guys down there, they're going to shut the office up, but they're staying in town, and I think the message I got from Harold this morning is a lot of people are going to need us, and a lot of people are going to need the Lord, and just super Christian family, and we want to keep them and all of that local community down there in our prayers. It's going to be a doozy from what it looks like.
Yep, so hats off to the folks at Wise Eye for what they're doing.
Yep. All right, what's your worst?
Well, my worst is really, it's a sad deal. It's all these Marines and others that were killed in Afghanistan this week. And you know, I just can't comprehend what these families go, well as the Marine themselves, but, you know, these families that are back home and they've got loved ones over there, you know, fighting for our freedom. And I want to turn this into a political rant, but this administration basically just left them people plan that I think could have possibly happened. And I just, my heart goes out to those military families and the rest of us.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad, sad story. So, you know, it's, I don't know. It's whether we're dealing with a hurricane or we're dealing with a family member that lost their life defending our country, whether we're dealing with a you know, sick kid, might have problems in our marriage or our relationships. It just seems like there's storms in everybody's life. You know, you look at the guys all the way up in Montana, Minnesota, that have been dealing with, you know, the family farms that have been dealing with the droughts that are up there. I saw a buddy of mine, Zach Johnson, he has the podcast Between the Rows. They've been dealing with drought, going to be dealing with, you know, horrible yields for row crop farmers, and then they got a huge hailstorm and windstorm and knocked all the corn that they did have over. So I just encourage you, it's really tough no matter what the situation you're going through. It's kind of like the storms of life phrase. At church this morning, our minister talked about Psalms 46, which says God is our refuge and strength, and even an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way, the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and foam, the mountains quake and surge. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place and the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fail. God will help her in break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms will fall. He lifts his voice. But then twice inside of Psalms 46, he says, the Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So, you know, it reminds us that whether we're dealing with what the monks or family is dealing with down in Louisiana with this hurricane, whether we're dealing with lost loved ones, sick kids, like the people Lester's Feet's helping, our refuge is going to be in our relationship with God. And, you know, if we're seeking it in a bottle, if we're seeking it in pills, if we're seeking it in porn or whatever we're trying to find, we're going in the wrong direction. So I hope that's a little bit of encouragement, and pray for those people that are being affected by it. So, with that, why don't we move on to the BuyAFarm.com property of the week.
BuyAFarm.com is your source for farm, recreational properties, rural homes, and more. Now, here is Don Higgins with this week's featured property.
This week's featured property is an online auction for 40 acres in Wayne County, Illinois. And there is a home on this 40 acres. The bidding will close Thursday, September 16th. So we got a little over 2 weeks here to check out that property and bid. If you got questions, you can call the agent, Mark Kennedy, at 618. This property is located 12 miles east of Mount Vernon, Illinois. It's got 40 acres, as mentioned. 15 of that is tillable with a pond. There's a three-bedroom home. There's rural water, wood furnace with attached garage. There's a 45 by 70 shop. The aerial photo looks like it lays out really good for hunting if you want. But it would also make a great farm homestead. What really caught me about this listing was that the current bid is only basically a little over $2,000 an acre, and it's got a nice home on it. I was shocked to see that price, and there's some great photos and such on the BuyAFarm.com website. If you're in that area and looking for a, you know, a home site or a hunting property, or even a property to buy and fix up a little bit and then flip it, this one here just fits the bill. And again, I encourage you to check it out on the website or call Mark Kennedy at 618-924-1747.
All right. Go to biofarm.com to learn more information and check out that and other listings. So we, I'm sure, have some doozy of some questions for tonight. So what do you got cooking for us there?
Well, the first question comes from Cody Walker from Mexico, Missouri. Cody actually sent two submissions. I think he was trying to get a T-shirt out of us, Terry. Well, but I kind of combined them into one. So, Cody, we're reading your questions, but you're only getting one T-shirt, buddy. Cody says, if you acquire a new property to hunt, is there a point to where you do not go in and scout it before you hunt? I may have the chance to hunt a new property that has about 5 acres of cover in the middle of a bag. If I go in one time to scout it in September and hang a camera, will I mess it up too much for this hunting season? I doubt there is any other human presence other than farming on the property. He goes on with the second part, but I'm going to answer this part first. When I acquire a new property like this, a lot of times what I'll do, if it's in the season or right before the season, sometimes I'll just carry a stand in on my back and hang it and hunt. And then I'll leave the stand behind and maybe a camera behind. If we're still a month away from season, at least here in Illinois, I'm not sure when the Missouri season comes in, but, I would get in there immediately and probably hang a stand and a camera. And then I would just stay away until the camera told me it was time to go in because there's a buck in the area. But this actually describes where I have a lot of my cameras, just little out of the way places here and there. And I'm just monitoring them for buck activity. And a lot of times that if there is buck activity, I won't hunt it immediately. I mean, it might be the next year or two before I get in there. What I'll do is I'll make sure that the buck has survived the gun season and even the late archery season. But if he's still there at the end of season, I know he's going to be there the following year as well, doing the very same thing he did this year. So I use that intel I've gathered from my trail camera and make my plan for the second season. And I think that's where a lot of deer hunters mess up, is they think that I got a new property, I need to get in there immediately and kill a buck. Well, that's great if you can do that. But what I'm generally trying to do is put the pieces together so in the future I know exactly, I can strike with precision. I can know when to go in there and where to be when I do go in and to get a buck killed. So be patient, bide your time, learn all you can about it through the trail camera. Be my best advice.
Did Cody say whether this is a one-year thing or whether this is a long-term? I mean, if it's a one-year thing and he's got a chance to hunt it and he doesn't think he's going to have a chance to hunt it next year, that might lend him to be a little bit more aggressive than, say, this is a new property he thinks he might be able to lock down, you know, where he's starting to put pieces together for next year. You know what I mean?
Right. That's a good point. I just assume if he's got permission, it's a continual situation where he'll be able to hunt it year after year, but he doesn't really say.
Yeah. So people have to remember that when they're asking you these questions, you're not only hunting world-class whitetail, but you're gathering yearly data and putting pieces together to be able to hunt those world-class animals. So you're not like a normal guy going in and saying, I'm hunting this spot for necessarily the first time, even though that's kind of what the Iowa deal is for you this year a little bit. But you got a little bit different perspective than most on these things.
No, that's true, Terry. That's a great point. So, you know, I'm looking for the biggest of the big bucks. And if you're fine with, say, a 3 or 4 year old deer, then you might, if you see there's one using the property, you may slip in and get it done. Yep. I'm usually waiting for him to live another year or two and see if he can get a little bit bigger.
Right.
So you just kind of got to tailor my information to your situation.
Yep.
All right. Cody's next question.
Yep.
It says, when do you all start to transition your cameras from your summer locations to the fall scrapes and funnels? Also, what do you consider a world-class buck? Anything that scores Boone and Crockett? If you are unable to locate a world-class whitetail, what would you be willing to fill a tag on? Well, there's about three or four questions right there, and Cody did a pretty good job putting us on the spot, Terry. when did you start transitioning your cameras from summer locations to the fall scrapes and funnels? I'll be doing that real quick here. I typically start that Labor Day weekend, which is the next weekend. That's one of the reasons I selected this question, because next weekend I'll be spending considerable time in the deer woods, moving a lot of cameras, getting them away from those summer feeding areas. You know, a lot of my cameras are near ag fields that are soon going to be harvested. And I want to get them to those rutting areas, if you will, scrape areas, funnels within the woods, whatever. I want them there way before the deer ever show up and start using those areas. When that buck passes through for the first time, when he hits that scrape for the first time, I want to catch him on camera the very first time. So I make that transition starting about the Labor Day weekend, and within a couple of weeks, I'll have them all moved. Definitely before the October 1st opening, those cameras will all be moved to where they need to be for the rest of the fall. What do you consider a world-class buck? Well, I consider it a little bit better than Boone and Crockett. I think any typical that has a net score over 180 inches is world-class, and I think any non-typical over 200 is world-class. That's just my definition. Others may have a different definition of what a world-class buck is. Says, if you are unable to locate a world-class whitetail, what would you be willing to fill a tag on? That varies from year to year, Cody. Some years, it may be cull bucks. I've actually had years, actually in 2018, in 17 is when I shot the Smokey and Trump. The next year, I did not have a good buck to shoot, and did not shoot a buck at all. Probably should have shot a couple of cull bucks, but yeah, I'm a little bit stubborn. I hate to burn a tag, and I just keep looking and looking and looking for a giant. And a lot of times, if I don't find one, it's, down to the wire, and some of those cull bucks slip through the cracks there at the end of the season and don't get shot. So every year is different, so I have no idea. I'm looking for a world-class buck, if you will, right through to the last day of season. Well, when it gets down there towards the end and I've still got two buck tags in my pocket, I start to, considering other options.
Mm-hmm. Good info.
Anything to add there?
Because we're both in that situation this year as of right now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't have a giant to hunt, that's for sure. So I'm hoping when these bachelor groups break up and bucks start moving around, maybe I'll have something show up.
All right. Well, thanks for your question, Cody. You will get a T-shirt.
The only one, Cody. I applaud you for trying twice. a lot of other people do the same thing, so we're not picking on you. Next question comes from Casey Larson from Downing, Wisconsin. Casey says, hello, Don and Terry. I have two questions. Question one is about the 10-year-old buck Terry shot on your farm. With you having a very aggressive strategy for removing inferior 3 to 4 year old bucks who will never score extremely high and clearing the way for the genetically elite, how did that buck keep slipping through the cracks for so many years? Question two, is it a fact or fiction? I hear a lot of big time hunters always talking about how important the moon is in relation with deer movement, and I've never seen any evidence suggesting any importance to the moon. Is the idea of the moon and deer movement fact or fiction? Well, let's go back to the 10-year-old buck Terry shot.
That was four years ago, right? Was it 4 years ago?
Yeah, we shot that in 17.
Okay. It was the year you shot Smokey and Trump.
Yep. So that means that buck, if he was 10 years old and 17, 10 and a half years old and 17, that buck was born in, 2007?
Yep.
So when that buck would have been 3 years old, it would have been about 2010. So back when that buck was a 3-year-old is when I was just starting to figure some things out, because up until about that point, I was trying to protect every buck.
Right.
I was wanting every buck to live to 5-6 years old. And I became frustrated because the better bucks were the ones that were disappearing. The lesser bucks in each age class seemed to be the ones that were always sticking around and making it to the older age classes. And it just, the idea came to me one day, maybe I need to shoot those bucks, those lesser bucks, when they're younger, and maybe the better ones will stay around. Well, the thing of it is, these deer are not, these are wild deer. Contrary to what some people might say, I'm not shooting deer in a pen. And just because I set my sights on certain bucks that I want to harvest, either myself or someone else, that doesn't mean we just automatically get it done. There's a lot of bucks every single year. At the end of season, there seems to be at least a couple of bucks that I wish had gotten shot that are still alive.
Right.
And it happened last year. It'll happen this year, I'm sure. The buck that Terry ended up shooting at 10 years old is one that just, for whatever reason, he just kept falling through the cracks. And I would see him while I was hunting, but I didn't want to burn a tag on him. And it just seemed that when I had a hunter with me, that buck didn't show. Or if he did, it was at a distance. I mean, I don't know how many times we sit in a smoky blind and seen that buck feeding down along the creek. You know where I'm talking about, Terry.
Right.
300 or 400 yards away. And that's going to do us no good when we're sitting there bow hunting. But the opportunity to shoot a mature buck, it just doesn't happen every time you go to the woods. And there's just those that fall through the cracks. And this is one that just continually did. He's probably the most extreme example. There's not another buck around that, you know, went that long without getting shot. I can think of one buck I got on the wall here in my shed that I think he was 6.5 before I finally got him shot. I shot him in the late season, probably the last week or so of season. I still had a buck tag, and he was 6.5, but I'd wanted to shoot him since he was 3, and it just took 3 extra years to get it done. And that's just what happens when you're hunting wild deer.
And for those who don't know the story, I didn't have a target buck that year. And Don actually said, you know, we had talked about it. We had actually gone and hunted another property. And he said, well, he said, I do have a 9-year-old on my property. You can come try to hunt if you want. And that's what first intrigued me about that deer. Because we thought he was 9 at the time, based on the trail camera pictures. That deer, the biggest that deer ever was he a 4-year-old when he was about 140 inches, 135, 140? There's a detailed blog on the Real World site. If you go back and scroll back through the blogs where there's yearly pictures of him, the biggest he ever got was maybe mid-130s at the most.
Right.
And so when Don said, yeah, you can come over and go after it, just the age structure is what intrigued me, because you never hear of – there's a lot of guys that say they shoot 8-, 9-, 10-year-old deer, but they don't have the documentation behind it or the proof behind it. And we were surprised when we sent the teeth off to deerage.com. He ended up being 10. So, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at him. It looks like Coke cans coming out of his head, and huge body on him, but you know, basically only 6 scoreable points that I don't even know. I never put a tape on him. There's not much antler there, but just a really, really cool buck. But it wasn't for a lack of trying. For people who think that you can basically kill any buck anytime, you got a good chance of it on your farm, but it doesn't mean it's a layup either.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, when we got the age back, or you got the age back and he turned out to be 10, I was not all that surprised. I would have been shocked if they would have said 8.
Right.
Because I knew I just felt positive he was at least 9.5.
Right.
I thought he was 9.5. When he came back 10.5, I wasn't shocked, and I didn't realize he was that old, but I don't doubt that whatsoever.
But there's been
other... But you're right.
There's been other bucks on your property that I've had that you've told me that I can shoot and go actively hunt. The buck last year that has 11 pointer, you know, mm-hmm. I actively hunted him last year and just didn't get it done. It doesn't mean just because it's on your property, it's going to happen. But the way you have it set up and all the work, you got it's very good chances, but it's not where it's a given every time. So it wasn't for a lack of trying anyway, but I was blessed to, and there's not many people that can say they've shot a 10.5-year-old buck, so it's a pretty cool story.
Yep, I can't say I've shot one.
All right, so fact or fiction, the moon. We've talked about this before on the podcast. Have you deviated from your standard answer that weather trumps moon?
No, I have not changed my opinion at all. I think there's probably something to the moon. I mean, the moon causes ocean tides to rise and fall. I've said before, my daughter works as an emergency room nurse in a hospital, and she'll tell you when the moon is full, the idiots get out and do stupid things and end up getting hurt in an emergency room. There is something to the moon. I don't plan my hunts around the moon. I pay very little attention to the moon. I pay very close attention to weather fronts. But with that said, there probably is a little bit of something with the moon, but weather trumps that for sure.
I'll never, let's dive into this just a little bit without taking too much time. You have an Iowa tag this year, a coveted Iowa tag that, you know, you burnt your preference points on. As of right now, no target buck yet. You would go and hunt Iowa blind on a weather front, but you would not go and hunt weather or Iowa blind for just the moon phase. Is that a correct statement?
No, absolutely not.
So
nope.
Maybe that helps Casey. You know, a lot of guys plan their Midwest trip around moon phases, you know, 6, 7, 8 months in advance, and they try to take vacation and all that kind of stuff. And I've been there. It's tough. That's what I really like about the properties that I have to hunt in Illinois is they're 3 hours away, and I can kind of time those up and go hunt, you know, 1, 2, 3 days really easy based on the weather instead of having to plan that out by the moon. So, good questions, Casey. Appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah. So, last question comes from Hunter Simmons from Woodville, Ohio. This is a good one, Terry. Okay. Hunter says, how do Sunday mornings work for you guys in the fall? Do you guys make it to Sunday service, or do you go to another service throughout the week? Also, how have you found a healthy balance of faith, hunting, work, and family?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah, for sure. You want to take it first, or you want me to?
It's really simple. You know, we don't hunt mornings for me, September and October. So I'm always at church on Sunday morning. When it gets to the point that it's closer to the rut, the time change is so early that most cases we can come out of the woods and still get into church. When I'm in Illinois, I'll actually go to church with Don. But I'm not saying I've never missed church before for that, but we try to make it a priority to be there as much as we can. As far as the balance of it, me personally, I've given up basically every other hobby. I don't fish, I don't turkey hunt, don't golf. So I do a lot for hunting and try to give the rest to my family. So I hope that answered it.
Yeah, you know, my answer is not going to be much different. You know, I don't hunt mornings except November, so there's only about 4 Sundays in the whole season where I would even, you know, consider missing church to hunt, but yet I don't. You know, I feel that I've been extremely blessed with my hunting, with my businesses related to hunting, and I know where my blessings come from. And there's a scripture, to whom much is given, much is required. And I try to live by that. To be honest, I don't even remember missing a church service because I was sitting in a tree in many years. It's just, I guess it's a priority. Church is a priority just like hunting is, but during the November rut, which would be the only time I'd be hunting mornings, if, like Terry said, that the time has changed, and I can still go hunting and spend, you know, at least 2 hours of daylight before I've got to climb out of that tree and get back home and to make it to church. And I guess luckily for me, I've never had a situation where it's time for me to climb down and get to church, and here's a big buck just out of range. I'm waiting for him to come in. I guess God has blessed me by not putting me in that situation. Lets me kill big bucks during other times of the week. Your last question on how the balance between faith, hunting, work, and family. I'll be honest, for a lot of years of my life, I did a terrible job of balancing those things. And the hunting was real close to the top. I wouldn't say I ever put hunting above my family, but there was a time where hunting has definitely been above my work. Anybody that remembers working with me at the job that I had at the factory will tell you that my hunting was definitely way above my work. And there was a time where it was above my faith. But as I've grown older and matured, I've really put everything into perspective and got my priorities in the proper order. And I think it just gets easier as you get older. As you get older and mature, you realize that, you know, deer hunting is great, shooting big bucks is great, but in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that important. You know, I think I mentioned it maybe last week. I mentioned it somewhere, and I think it was on the podcast last week. But if you think about it, you know, at every moment, there is a parent right now that is in a hospital room with a sick child, and that child is not going to survive through this night. Tomorrow, that child's going to be gone. And when you think about that and you put it in perspective, it really makes it a whole lot easier to get your priorities in order. Deer hunting is not even close to the top of my priorities anymore, like it once was when I was younger. So it takes some time, but, you know, I find that the more I've been able to put my priorities in order, the more blessed I've become in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So I just encourage all the listeners to take a look at your priorities. When you're sitting in your tree stand this fall, consider, you know, what's most important to you. And you got a lot of time to sit there in your tree and reflect. And deer hunting's great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's been my life, but it's not the most important thing in my life by any means.
I'm reminded of the story that you told of our mutual friend Kyle Harmon after he shot Uno. And, you know, he was after that buck for, I don't know how many years. I mean, he had a long, long history with trying to kill this deer. And you went over to see the deer in person. And I think, what did he look at you and say? Is it really worth it? And, you know, that's just the type of man that Kyle is and why we respect him so much. But there's definitely guys out there that put their priorities in the wrong place. And if I have to choose between my family, my faith, or my friends over me shooting a deer, those three are going to get the priority every time.
Absolutely. And that was a great question, Hunter. We appreciate you submitting that. And
absolutely.
You'll get a free T-shirt as well.
All right. Well, I'm excited about something, Don. I don't know if anybody else out there cares. But I have finally found a backpack, a hunting backpack that is made for whitetail hunters to hang in a tree. And it's in stock, and they promised me I would have it this week. So I'm not going to talk about it until I have it in hand, but I got to spend some time with this specific backpack. And I'm a nerd when it comes to this kind of stuff. And there's just, to me, there's nothing out there that really has enough room but not too big, and it's not one of these ones that these Westie guys are, you know, hiking up in the Colorado mountains. I need a good stand that fits a tree stand application, and I finally found one, and it's in stock. So I can't wait to share this thing on social media, because I actually got to spend about a couple hours with this thing, brand new to the market. And so if you're interested in a new pack, be sure to follow social media this week. I'm really geeked out about this thing. I've been looking for a really good backpack for a long time.
Well, I'm anxious to hear how it works out for you, because I've never had a backpack that I've been 100% happy with. I mean, I've had some that were a whole lot better than others, but I've never had one that was ideal. It just seems like they're either too small or they're too big. They're made for, you know, camping in the mountains of Colorado, like you said.
Yep.
Or they're too small. There's not enough pouches, and you know, I need one when it comes time to go on a rut hunt and sit all day that I got space for my lunch that I usually don't have. I got room for my camera arm and my video camera and all the other gear I take along. So I'll be anxious to hear how this works out for you.
Yeah, this one's made for a tree stand. And it's in a camo that I'm excited about, a camo pattern that I'm excited about to blend in really well, but it's soft, it's quiet. And, you know, the access points to it are made to where you're hanging it on a tree right beside you and you can get in and out of it without a lot of movement, but not all these big flaps and ties and everything all over it. So I'll be posting some pictures when I get that on hand this week. The other thing is a quick reminder to everybody. I talked with Chris Yates at Victory Chevrolet again this week. He's getting a bunch of calls, but remember, if you put in an inquiry to him earlier in the year when they were dealing with a shortage of trucks, and he said, check back with me later, he is able to order anything you want. So if you want a high country or you want a work truck dually without a bed, he has a green light from Chevrolet and GMC to order whatever spec you want. He's not handcuffed by the shortage of trucks as much anymore. So if you need to get a hold of Chris, just send Don or I a message and we'll get you in touch with Chris or his right-hand man, Colby. So just remember that he's got the green light to order trucks now.
Sounds good, Terry. All right. I'm not even going to buy a backpack till you buy yours and tell me how you like it.
All right. Well, I'll be able to give you the insight next Saturday night. I'm going to be sitting in a tree or a box blind. The tough part about hunting first week of September in Kentucky is you better be ready to get hot. Yeah. It's those bucks are still in bachelor groups, still going out to feed at night. We only hunt maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before dark, but it can get really, really hot really quick. So. I've been known to set in a box blind with basketball shorts on before, so it gets so hot. So it's like a sauna sometimes.
I'll be waiting for your call or your text.
Yeah, you gonna drive 4 hours, help me drag one out?
If you need me to, I will.
I'm sure we can find somebody to do that. But hopefully we can get a good one on the ground. And then the following weekend, my guest that won the Lester's Feet raffle, he was supposed to come opening weekend, but the schedule didn't work out. So he's not hunting opening weekend. I'm going to leave that farm alone, the farm that he is hunting. So he's going to get basically first crack on that place. But that'll be the second weekend of the season. And so hopefully, if all goes to plan, the first 2 weeks of September equal two bucks down by me and my guest.
That'd be great.
And so keep us posted on your food plot situation. Make sure you're watching Don's social media on Instagram. Look at Higgins Outdoors to see what he's going to end up deciding on this food plot that got washed out for the third time this year. So
I'll be posting pictures.
All right, Don. Well, you got anything else to before you close us out?
I think that's it for this week, Terry.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don will take us out with our sponsors.
We want to thank BuyAFarm.com, Victory Chevrolet, 360 Hunting Blinds, Real World Wildlife Products, Matthews Archery, Lone Wolf Tree Stand, WildlifeFarming.com, Quiet Cat, Vortex Optics, and Vengeance Camo. Hope everyone has a great week.
And we'll try to get that audio fixed where Don cut out. Sorry about that.